So, I assume you've all done some drugs. Some of you probably are doing drugs right now. Nothing like a good meditation class on a couple hits of acid. So let's have a frank discussion about drug use and the pros and cons and the like we did last week about sex and both the joys and pleasures associated with intoxication of all of its different forms, and also the suffering and difficulties that can often go along with intoxication and drug and alcohol use. And I'll speak a little bit about Buddhist attitudes about drugs. And kind of what the Buddha suggested a wise relationship to intoxicants are, and why I think he suggested that. But let's start with the pros. The professional drug users in the room. What do you like about being high or tipsy or loaded or whatever you call it? What are some of the good things about drugs, Natalie?
I don't care about anything.
That it takes away the caring. Okay?
In the beginning it felt good, and then after that, you know, the caring is like taking away the pain or the reality. Not necessarily being a good feeling, but taking away the
So pleasure, though, that first part of your statement, it feels good. And it alleviates pain on some level, right? If there's a pleasure that we get out of whatever drugs we use, and some on some level they allow us to avoid pain. Yeah, please, Kat.
Certain drugs, like alcohol for me, made me relax, or pot made me even more paranoid. So, depending on what it was I was running, it heightened whatever situation I was already feeling or whatever was going on in me. Mm-hmm. And then coming down off of it, then it would just lower, you know, it just would make everything more intense. Mm-hmm. And then I'd physically feel numbing.
But the good part was the relaxation,
right.
The
it heightened,
heightened sensitivity.
Yeah.
Please?
Functioning.
Helped you function better, kind of maybe more energy or more something, more functioning. Yeah. Is that Chris?
False. Sorry.
It's okay. Go ahead.
False sense of self.
That's a good thing. It gives us a false sense of self, of kind of maybe confidence. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. And all of a sudden, you're the most beautiful woman in the world.
Right.
Everybody's interested in you.
The beer goggles.
Yeah.
Right? I'm hot. So all of that sort of feeling of elation and yeah, Chris.
An expansion of consciousness or an altered state of perception.
Mm-hmm. So there can be positive. Altered states and expanding and mm-hmm. Please?
It lets me write.
And help us be creative, whether it's writing or drawing or painting or creating music, or there can be good drug-induced creativity.
It seems to get me out of my way.
Right.
So that I can create.
Yeah.
I felt warm and relaxed, and there was a sense of clarity. Also, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Please.
I don't know. I felt just like totally letting go of everything. Just sort of like my own time.
Mm-hmm. Not so different than this sort of letting go that we're trying to do in meditation, and a good bong hit or glass of wine or tab of acid or shot of heroin or bowl of Freebase or morphine suppository, whatever. Whatever you're into can help us let go, right? Can help us like let go of the attachments and such. Yeah.
I think self-meditating if I'm anti-anxiety, extreme anxiety.
Mm-hmm. You take away some of our suffering, at least temporarily, can medicate it, yeah. Please, yeah.
The ritual?
The ritual can be really fun, depending on what, whether it's getting into wine shopping or it's getting into, cooking up drugs or rolling joints or... I think that's an important piece. There can be a real community. Of course, so much of modern social community is around the pub. Oh, even though we're not in England. It is. It's around alcohol. It's around the bars. It's around, alcohol. And when I say drugs, I mean alcohol as well, of course, as the, legal drug that it is. And, there's such a, can be a real community ritual around it, which is a good thing on some level. Was there other hands over here? Please, share.
A sense of intimacy. We do it together.
Mm-hmm. If it's shared.
Shared, yeah.
Where we are both on mushrooms.
And it's amazing. Everybody else.
Yeah. Everyone else is normal and we're tripping balls. Is that it? It's a pretty good list, but don't be shy. Be honest, and as I ask this, reflect for yourself. What is it that you like, And I'll ask in a minute, or maybe I think I'll ask about how many people here, drink or don't drink or and stuff like that. But, why do you drink? Think about it. Why do you have a glass of wine or a beer? What do you like? What do you get out of it? Please.
Well, sometimes it gives you a really good excuse to do really dumb shit, so that after you do dumb shit...
I was drunk. It's a good...
I mean, if you're that manipulative.
It's a cop-out, yeah. Yes, please, in the back.
It's fun.
But
I mean, no particular...
Yeah.
It's fun.
Pleasure fun. Yeah.
It's enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. There's a moment... in the evening with my child, when I hate to admit that I'm bored out of my mind, and having a glass of wine gets me through that moment.
Avoidance of boredom. Huge, right? Because it's fun. It gives us a little pleasure. Yeah, and then we'd also don't have to murder our children, which is a positive. Yeah?
All right. I was just going to suggest that you do that countdown after you did that one time, where you say, how many people have been a day?
Oh, since we got drank, since we used drugs? Well, maybe we'll do something like that. What else?
Companionship.
Escape. Stripping of defenses.
Quieting of the mind,
chatter. To unwind, decompress.
Sounds like there's a lot of good reasons to use drugs. We've made a strong argument for a lot of useful reasons. Well, let's go to the other side. And it's hard, just kind of drugs, because there's so many different, because I'm including everywhere from pot and alcohol to hallucinogenics to narcotics and And I'm not in when I say drugs, of course, I mean, I don't mean medication in the sense of sort of psychotropic meds or kind of medical use of drugs. I mean casual use, intentional, pleasure-based use. What about the other side? What are the downsides to drugs and alcohol? Please.
It leaves you spiritually and morally bankrupt.
And have a feeling of... Well, I guess that's it, right? That the whole other list. It can lead to a feeling, a direct feeling of feeling really down, really empty, really bankrupt.
The physical detox and coming down.
Physical detox coming down, hangovers, all of the kind of leftover unpleasant feelings that, especially if we get into abusing, if we go too far with drugs and alcohol, that can really hurt.
Loss of freedom and free will.
I also understand that many people that are raising your hands now are in addiction or in recovery. So, like myself. When we cross the line into addiction, that there's a loss of free will. Did you?
Jail's kind of dry.
Sometimes we can end up getting incarcerated for the activities or the just the possession of the illegal drugs that we like.
Hangover.
The hangover is a big part of it, right? That's a.
If you use it for escapism, you avoid conflicts, then that has worse consequences.
That can be a real long-term cycle of I've been avoiding, and the consequences are still there.
And the uncontrolled insanity and chaos that brings you to life, not being able to manage your life at all, being sound.
Especially when we cross into addiction.
I have to remember this since I'm in recovery, just becoming like an empty vessel. an empty person.
Yeah, a loss of self Not in the good loss of self, but an empty, yeah, I get it.
A little bit of brain damage and heart damage and a little bit of death here and there.
How about the death? I'm curious, if you reflect for a moment, and it's obvious to many of us, but of the death, how many people, if you reflect on your life, your family, your friends, colleagues, know people that have died around drug, alcohol, including car accidents and all of that other stuff. So there's been a lot of that kind of suffering. Almost, the majority of the people in the room affected by that on some level. It lets us check out a little bit, right? Which was also kind of on the pros list. People like that. But it also, we miss. That's what was said too. We miss being present, being mindful.
Okay.
Barfing's not much fun. Well, that first heroin barf isn't that bad. Alcohol barfing's not very fun. Heroin barfing is kind of pleasurable. I might put that on the pros. I'm not sure.
The hurt and the pain that we cause others, family members and friends and people, if it's anybody that's around or cares about
us. Sometimes how it can.
The blackout.
Total loss of. The embarrassing things we might do.
Or just the fact that I don't remember.
Loss of life, of time. Please?
A delusion and an ability to deal with people. Terrible relationships with my family and friends.
I'm also very curious, I know I'm hearing from a lot of the recovering addicts and alcoholics in the room, I'm very curious to hear from the non, you know, the people who enjoy a glass of wine, is there a downside? The people who enjoy a joint here and there, is there something that doesn't feel like that there is a negative effect or a downside, or is it all positive? I'm curious about that. Thanks, Rachel.
Drugs cause me anxiety, and whenever I'm high, I just like want to not be high as soon as possible, which is probably a good thing. And I just freak out when somebody has to spoon me. So I think it's going to be okay. And I like to drink like a couple drinks after that. Like I just start to freak out because I feel like I'm not in control of my life. And then also, like, if I, like, go through a phase where I drink a lot, like, I start to, like, gain weight, and then, like, that's not hot.
So both the physical and the kind of emotional out of control is not
yeah,
pleasant.
Yeah, as soon as I, like, yeah, I don't like it.
Please?
For me, it feels it's a rare occasion that I indulge in anything anymore. It's a once in a while thing, but it always feels a bit like a cheat. Sort of dropping the veil artificially instead of having discipline and applying that within yourself.
Mm-hmm. So, there's a little bit of that. Yeah, is there guilt around cheating?
A little bit.
Yeah, a little
not
bit
not
of.
A lot,
right.
I'm like, you know, I was just a little more disciplined.
This is fun, but it's
yeah.
artificial or something.
Yeah. It's not as good as it could be if I did it myself.
Right. Please?
I don't feel bad about drinking. I feel bad about the fact that. My daughter's friends associate girlfriends equals alcohol equals fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I get very uncomfortable with the way that it looks on the outside, but truthfully, I'm not having a problem. The only problem I have really is physical, because I don't like the way I feel if I've gone through a period where I'm drinking more than a glass of wine a night. But most of the issue I have is the fact that I know I'm being seen.
There's something about the role modeling, right? Of especially with kids.
Yeah.
Kind
I
of.
Now, so
sure.
Yeah.
Tell say more. Say that. I kind of get it.
Just there could be a harsh judgment of those who don't drink. It's not because they're in recovery, they just don't drink.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they associate any smoking upon it as, ooh.
Right, that's
and
bad.
And you're slacking, or you're, it's like,
yeah.
There's no balance on the other side.
Feeling judged.
Yeah.
And being judged.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chris?
Okay, like, say you buy a bag of cocaine, right?
How big of a bag? Okay.
You don't know, like, who lost their life for that to get in your possession, or, like, you buy a beer from Anheuser-Busch, you're supporting this totally aggressive, like, corporation. All the karma that kind of is attached to it.
I think that's a very important consideration. Where is our money going, and who is it supporting, and how much sort of blood has been spilled to get this cocaine, heroin, marijuana, or Budweiser onto our plate, and how maybe karmically implicit we are in some of that. Because we're supporting it, because we're using our energy, our money, our life's energy to purchase it.
There's the community that happens from drug use, but there's also the isolation that happens with any kind.
Yeah.
For me, sometimes it can be a self-betrayal. Not choosing a high road.
Mm-hmm.
Or I am choosing a high road. But you know what?
Yes. Well. from a Buddhist perspective. There's nothing immoral about drug and alcohol use. There's no, it's not a sin. It's not any of that stuff. It's an option, of course, that, you know, we have some level of free will, and from a Buddhist perspective, the choice is completely on each individual, how they relate to drugs and alcohol. But Buddhism has, and the Buddhist teachings have only one goal. And this is the goal of ending suffering. Of a practical, reliable way of relating to our lives, of each individual being empowered from within ourselves to have happiness and freedom that's not dependent on any external circumstances or substances. A true sense of well-being and happiness, of what is called nirvana, which is freedom from greed and attachment, freedom from hatred and aversion and judgment, and freedom from delusion, or being confused or selfish or self-centered. So of course the Buddha says, if you're really serious about freeing yourself, what we need to do, the path to freedom, consists of constant mindfulness. We have to be paying attention all of the time. Whenever we're not paying attention, the forces, the conditioning, and the factors of greed, of tendency towards attachment and clinging are so strong. The habit towards aversion is so strong that if we're not paying attention, we will suffer. We will meet pain with aversion, not compassion. We will meet pleasure with craving and clinging, not accepting non-attachment, appreciative non-attachment. So the only reason not to use drugs and alcohol, or one of the main reasons that the Buddha talks about, is because it will block your ability to be mindful. No moral judgment, a practical suggestion. That if you really want to be awake, right? The whole Buddhist's meditative path is one about being awake. And so much of what we all admitted is good about drugs and alcohol is that they're subtle levels of not being so awake. And it's nice, right? It feels great to go to sleep a little bit, to be high, to be intoxicated, to take the edge off, to take the self-consciousness away. But what it's doing is it's literally taking away our mindfulness of the present. It's clouding it. It's obscuring it in some way or another. Which is one of the reasons why it feels so good. Because often the present is boring, like people said. Or it's painful, like people said. And so we end up, drugs and alcohol can become a really pleasant way to alleviate that boredom or that pain or that difficulty. But of course, substances are temporary. They don't work long term. And many of us have in this room have tried to sustain constant intoxication, constant avoidance, constant elation, constant drug-induced. And it never works very well. Almost always lands you in some sort of rehab or jail or, you know, kind of detoxing on someone's couch if you really try to sustain that kind of drug or alcohol use. I don't think the Buddha knew about addiction. I wouldn't say that it didn't exist in his time. I'm sure that there were alcoholics and drug addicts in his time, but I don't think he really knew about it. There's nowhere in the suttas that I know of that he really addresses actually being addicted to alcohol or drugs or. But in so many ways, all of his teachings could be said that the second noble truth, the cause of human suffering, tanha, could be translated as addiction. The literal translation is thirst or craving. Craving for pleasure, craving for elation, craving for all of the stuff that we said that we like about drugs. And it's that craving for unrealistic type of pleasure that causes almost all of the suffering in the world. Of course, drugs don't cause suffering. Relationship to drugs causes suffering. Addiction to drugs is suffering, or alcohol. Or that's not the substances. You know, there's nothing wrong with. Actually, a lot of the are good. They're good medicine. A lot of them, if used as medicine. I think that it's a little important to take this conversation even broader. The Zen master, the Vietnamese Zen master Thich Nhat Hanh, when talking about the precept, the fifth precept, where the Buddha suggests that people who are serious about training themselves and following the Buddhist path, he suggests to abstain from intoxicants of any kind. So if you're serious about the practice, it's a good idea to be drug-free. Thich Nhat Hanh takes this perspective of intoxication to a much broader level than just talking about drugs or alcohol. He says, let's be honest. Look at all of the other ways that we get intoxicated too. Not just by taking a drink. We can get intoxicated by, well, you tell me. How else do you get high?
A shop.
Shopping can be an intoxicant.
Sex.
Sex is a drug, perhaps? Sex.
No, I wasn't going to say sex, but I'm also thinking adrenaline.
Adrenaline, there can be a natural exercising something, yeah? Food can be an intoxicant.
I'm having a hard time separating intoxicant from meditation because there are things that I do that really bring me in body and bring me aware in very much the same way that intoxicants do.
Mm-hmm. So let's play with it. Perhaps meditation can be an intoxicant. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying?
No. Not so much that it can be. It's just that where is the difference between the two? Because if I'm doing something that is
mindfulness,
if it brings me fabulous awareness and in-body presence,
mm-hmm.
why is that bad?
I think that for the most part, what's being pointed towards here is experiences that maybe take us out of ourselves rather than bring us in to what you're talking about.
Okay.
That sometimes when we're shopping, we get high and we're sort of out of body. when we're, you know, food, sometimes it can, we can be, you know, at the smorgasbord or whatever, and it's, we're not really being mindful. We're in the lust and the craving of the sexuality or the experiences, I think is the way that it's talked about in this way. Stuff that brings us away from presence rather than into presence. Yes?
Gossip and drama.
Something very intoxicating about a good gossip.
Money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
TV?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The big one I challenge everyone to think about, elections.
That was the drama she was talking about. Yeah.
Facebook.
Yeah, sure. Internet stuff, yeah.
Crushes?
Mm-hmm. So the kind of obsession, crush. Sexuality stuff. Thich Nhat Hanh, I think, I forget exactly, maybe somebody else here knows, he says intoxicating conversations, intoxicating films or television, intoxicating books or, you know, things or magazines, things that take us away, that bring us into a fantasy rather than into the present. That could be a big one.
Achievement.
Competition. Yeah. Attention.
Competition.
And winning.
I was going to mention money and desire for money, but also keying on what you just said, fixation on other things.
Fantasizing in general. Sure.
Being right.
Huge, right? Feels so good. Feels so high when I'm right and they're all wrong. Feels so good. We're so wise and they're all so ignorant. Yeah.
Kind of off the subject, but she reminded me about authors and Buddhists who write and talk about their enlightenment through intoxicants,
mm-hmm.
or the deepening of their practice through intoxicants, and Zen practitioners who also drink as well.
Mm-hmm. I think that thanks, Enrique, for saying that, because I am presenting the Southern school of Buddhism perspective around the precepts where the Buddha encourages abstinence, which it is my understanding and view and belief that that was his teaching, the original Buddha. But if you look at Buddhism, many Buddhist sects and traditions include drinking alcohol in their practices, and that it's totally fine. It's not forbidden or even discouraged in moderation, supposedly. Actually, just a couple of weeks ago, we had these Tibetan monks, and a lama from Tibet was in town, and he was chanting and doing some empowerments over at our center in Hollywood. And I forgot that alcohol was often part of their closing ritual in the Tibetan tradition. Not that I would have done anything about it, but I would have thought about it a little bit more if I had remembered that. I walked in while they were closing the ceremony, and there were 40 ounces of malt liquor on the altar. And I was just shocked. Because I forgot that that's part of their Buddhist practice, of Tibetan Buddhist tradition, is that they drink Mad Dog. I think it was Colt 45. I think it's actually traditionally supposed to be whiskey, but they couldn't get any, so they're like, well, 40 ounces, all right. And they weren't chugging 40 ounces, they were just taking shots of it or something like that. But I think that this is important, that not all Buddhism has a drug-free or alcohol-free perspective. And of course, and I think Chris pointed to it, and I'm curious actually how many people here have come to spiritual practice, not through the suffering of drug addiction, but to sort of from the mind expansion of a good acid trip or something. Certainly like people like Ram Dass and my father. And I think a lot of that generation, you know, drugs and especially hallucinogens were the doorway to their Dharma practice. Ram Dass was once asked about that and about drugs. And he said, my feeling is it can be quite useful to open the door, to show you that there is more going on here than you thought. He said, but it's so dangerous to continue to use the substance to open that door. Once you know that it's there, important to use spiritual practice to open it yourself and walk through. To not kind of continue to rely on the drug for that.
That's exactly what I read about the sheep. Yeah. Getting there and
yeah.
I just thought of another couple of really good getting tattooed and pierced. Mm-hmm. And
for sure.
Gambling?
Gambling can be a good high.
Blind rage.
Blind rage. Anger. Anger is a great drug, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
People just set themselves up for more and stuff.
Chocolate. Right, I mean, there's all of the lesser stimulants too, like coffee, chocolate, nicotine, Red Bull. Red Bull is its own drug now.
Beer.
Beer.
Like horror films.
Yeah. Well, I don't have so much more to say. A couple more comments, yeah.
Oh, teaching.
Attention of teaching or the...
No, like just, you know, an addiction to teaching. It feels good to do it because it's a high.
There's a high to it.
There's a high, it's teaching.
What do you think the high is? Is it the attention or what is it?
I guess it can be different things. But certainly part of it's the attention. An addiction to feeling like you're smart, like you can guide, like, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
That there's a separation to make.
Yeah. I know, and they don't.
Yeah.
They need me.
Yeah. Creepy like that. Yeah.
Well, she's mentioning sharing the knowledge, but, I mean, I get high just sitting in the classroom and gaining the knowledge.
Last couple of comments.
I'm an artist, and when I'm in my art, when I get
something about in the creative.
Yeah, the creative zone.
I just thought I'd point out, from what I understand, a lot of the early Hindu scriptures, the Vedas, were written by Brahmins who were tripping on the soba drug. You know, it was their way of like tuning into, you know, what the gods were telling them, which was part of the evolution of the Hindu Dharma, which ultimately created the conditions for the emergence of the Buddha Dharma, so we wouldn't be here without drugs on some level.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Would Thich Nhat Hanh say that all of the things that have been mentioned here are bad?
Well, not bad, as in a judgment. But I think that part of what Buddhism and people like Thich Nhat Hanh or the Buddha was originally pointing at was not that any of this stuff is bad, but that none of this stuff leads to true happiness. And that if true happiness and the end of suffering is our goal, we should really closely look at our relationship to everything that's been mentioned. So what is our intention and experience behind everything that we do? And what are the things that we use to escape versus the things that we use or cultivate to be present? And so that's what he's pointing towards in that precept, is that escaping and avoiding will never lead to true happiness. And that if true happiness is your goal, that's going to be important to be mindful more and more, and probably to renounce some of the things that even may bring us temporary pleasure, but block our mindfulness and don't allow us to have the ability to respond skillfully, wisely. So not bad. I really don't think that Buddhism puts much of a judgment on it. Much more just of a practical, if we want this kind of well-being in our lives, what's going to get us there? And let's honestly look at what's not going to get us there. And then the decision is up to us. I don't think that there should be, I hope that you don't become an uptight Buddhist about any of this stuff. But I do hope that you are honest with yourself about what you're doing and why. Why I'm smoking cigarettes, or why you're having a glass of wine, or why you're smoking pot, of really looking at the truth of why you're using it and why you're choosing to, or I'm choosing to, escape. Right? And that's a conscious decision rather than a blind habit or a delusional idea that we've somehow created into it being positive and good, and when it actually isn't so positive.
I can't help. I gotta keep going down this road.
Sure.
I hope I'm not keeping up everybody's time.
Okay.
2 years ago, and I'm on my third round right now, trying to live a full year by the precepts.
Uh-huh.
And where I stumble every time.
Mm-hmm.
It's partly because I'm still having a hard time understanding whose definition of philosophy to use.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way we've discussed this tonight actually has opened me up to looking at it from yet another point that I had not thought of before. But I'm still struggling with this because I don't believe that my level of intoxication and my frequency of intoxication is impeding my growth. It might be slowing it down occasionally,
mm-hmm.
but in terms of just stopping me in my tracks, I'm not avoiding my growth. I'm taking a little break once in a while.
Who have you looked at the precepts with in the past?
Before I came here, I've been doing Soto Zen at a fairly formal place, which definitely says no intoxicants in terms of, it's going to get you loopy, it's not allowed.
So a glass of sake is not okay in your Soto tradition?
Well, I wouldn't even call it my tradition anymore.
Or the one that you were hanging out with?
It was because I could not stand in the box
that they put you
in. Stay there. So I guess I'm not actually looking for an answer as much as I'm just hoping that it had anybody else really found this to be the one and only. I can't do it. I shouldn't say I can't. I don't want to live life without the allowance of
Well, here's what I'll... of course, you're going to have to find your own way with this, as all of us are. I think most of my teachers, my parents and Ram Dass and Jack Kornfield and Wes Nisker and Eugene Kei, almost all of the Buddhists that are in my tradition, that are my elders, have a drink now and then. None of them drink daily. None of them drink regularly. But almost none of them are really drug-free. They come from a generation where, a sort of American generation where they were pretty loose about the precepts, I think. And because a lot of them actually came to Buddhism and Dharma through drugs, through the 60s sort of drug scene. So there's a lot of wonderful role models out there of people who are not sober, who are seriously wise, seriously committed to spiritual practice. And important to be honest, that the Buddha was clear in the precept, the fifth precept, when he stated, to abstain from intoxicating drinks and drugs that lead to a state of loss of mindfulness or heedlessness. His encouragement was, give up your wine. You don't have to follow that encouragement. But be honest that you're choosing not to. Right? He also said, somebody said gambling. He also said, you know, if you're serious about the Dharma, good idea not to gamble. And actually, one of the reasons why he said not to gamble, he said, because you'll probably be hanging out with drunkards. And a lower class of thieves and scoundrels. I know that that's the Buddha's teaching. I love to play poker. I gamble regularly. I love to go and play poker with the thieves and scoundrels. Those are my people. You know? And so I think it's very important to, you know, a lot of people in this room can take that precept easily because we're alcoholics and addicts in recovery. Not easily, but it's not so much of an option for us. I think it's much more of a dilemma for the people in the room that aren't addicts, that don't have that, you know, issue the way that many of us do. Because for us, abstinence is necessary for life. For many people, abstinence isn't necessary. The last thing that I'll say to you personally is don't believe that you can't. You can. I get that you don't want to, but it sounds like a part of you does want to.
Yeah.
My father said that he felt that it was important in the development of a spiritual practice, not to be monastic or to even practice all of the precepts for the rest of our life, but to have a good chunk of time away from those things. To take it, like you said, to take a year or 5 years or 10 years and be drug-free and be vegetarian and be, you know, take some time in renunciation. You can come back to it with a different relationship later, maybe. But good to have that discipline. So lastly, I think it's interesting, as Natalie suggested, for us to go around and each of us talk about the last time that we ingested some drugs or alcohol that lead to heedlessness. And not as any judgment or comparison, but just to kind of see that there's a real diversity in relationship to these things here. And I'll start with, it's been over 20 years, for the real drugs and alcohol in about an hour since I've had a cigarette. Yeah, how long has it been?
4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. 6 days.
Wow.
Yeah, last time I did heroin and saw a girl that I was hanging out with almost OD, and
it's 13 months.
Mm-hmm. A few days since the beer.
Mm-hmm. 4 years and 4 months.
A little over 2 years. A year and a half.
Single walk yesterday afternoon.
A couple hours ago.
A lot of stuff.
7 months.
4 years, 2 months.
That you think of? Mm-hmm. Not 2 years.
2 days.
Yesterday.
Couple weeks.
About a year.
Couple weeks.
They said. I had a couple pints of Guinness and smoked a bowl on Halloween.
2 days.
I had some alcohol on Saturday. That was 2 days ago.
19 days.
Mm-hmm. Almost 6 years.
About 5.5 years. And then Jay since I've over 8. 5 or 7 months.
8 years.
5.5 years.
Beer yesterday, but I was right several times today.
Somewhere on the floor back here.
6 months, 4 days.
Mm-hmm. I overrated
her. 22 years since a lovely relationship with bulimia and cocaine, but 2 days, 6 months. I have 10 years off drugs and 5 years off alcohol.
I had a beer and some vomit last night.
A year and a week. Almost
19 years off drugs and alcohol, and 6 years after this.
I started the program 7 days ago, so I've been clean for 7 days. Not drinking, but I picked up cigarettes. But I plan on stopping that.
Two days ago, I had a glass of gin. 6.5 years.
2 years, 1 month, and 12 days. And then yesterday, I ate half a chocolate cake.
And I've been reading that this book I'm cracked out on your whole talk.
I won't tell Thich Nhat Hanh.
2 days. I had a beer on, a couple beers on Saturday, but I've been meditating for a long time and have no problem drinking beer every now and then, so.
My last coke binge was 5 years ago, and I haven't had a cigarette in about 2 weeks, actually.
I had a cigarette 2 days ago, and I smoked a joint on Halloween, and I had no problem smoking a joint at the same time.
Smoked about a week ago. Had a beer last night.
So I've been following the precepts for 3 years.
Alcohol in the drugs, May 7th, 1986. And I have a picture to prove it, what I looked like my last night. But really important is I'm used to wondering when I call beer stuff, I'll say it, when my hands are in my stomach. I was drinking 100 ounces of Diet Coke until last September. 5 20-ounces had to happen every fucking day, whether I wanted them or not. And then, lastly, total sexual misconduct until June in a way that was so harmful to me. So I really think you can kill yourself on other things. No, I feel clean. I'm fucking clean.
Do we miss anybody? Anybody want to change your story?
I don't want to change my story, but I'll say that one of the things that sucks about drinking occasionally is that you don't actually feel like in solidarity with friends and sangha that are abstaining and sober, and so that's something I didn't drink for a couple of years, and that's something I missed, actually.
I heard Ajahn Amaro, one of my teachers who's a Buddhist monk, at one time say that one way to think about the abstinence, even if it's not a problem, he was encouraging people in this talk, just out of what you're saying, the solidarity, and just out of knowing how much suffering there is in this world around alcohol and drugs and addiction, and just as Buddhists or as spiritually minded people, that we want to be allies, we want to be compassionate, we want to be supportive. And he was talking about how you never know if there's some struggling alcoholic on the other side of the room at the party, and they see you drinking, and they think, I'm going to have a drink too. Not that that's your responsibility, but to be the person in the room who is also not drinking can be such a support and such a sort of compassionate offering, was his point on that. And I've heard Thich Nhat Hanh speak similarly about that, that being drug-free as a Buddhist practitioner isn't just for yourself, but it's also an act of compassion for this world.
I want to say this really is a testament to you in this place of all things. I know that when I started coming here, I was not sober, and I sort of did it the opposite way, where a lot of people, my friend, you know, Grace took me here, and she was sober, and most people started in AA and came here, but I don't think I would have gone into AA, really, if I didn't come here. Like, when I was doing therapy with you and talking with you, I think that was really the solid step that made me realize that I wanted to be completely clean, so.
Thank you. And I really hope that this kind of talk doesn't reek of religious Puritanism kind of. Did it much?
No.
I hope it doesn't, because I don't give a fuck whether you drink or not. And either does, or get high, or either, you know, and the Buddha certainly doesn't care, right? It's totally personal for each individual of what we choose to do. And the point is happiness, and what's going to bring us happiness. And the list of pros, a lot of it's true. You know, it's wonderful to have a glass of wine if you can do that, right? People really enjoy that. There's a lot of reasons to drink and use drugs. There's a lot of reasons not to drink and not to use drugs. And each of us have to find our own way with it. I'm actually surprised that I didn't know you were all sober. So many people in here, I mean, if you added it up, you know, dozens, maybe hundreds of years of kind of combined sobriety. Yeah. Last couple comments.
I once heard Shinzen Young talk about his own experience with marijuana, and he said he used to get high every day. And he was a monk in Japan and a lot of things. And he said after he went to a Goenka retreat and he was meditating and was doing a sweeping meditation, he just noticed this place and his monk wasn't right, and he spent a lot of time during that retreat just going through it. And he said he went back and the people had given him some Maui Waui, which in our day was what we did. And he said he just never picked it up. The meditation just allowed that behavior to fall away. And I think that's a real testament to meditation, because I've had behaviors just fall away. And I didn't really put in an effort to have that happen.
I love it. My father told a similar story. He was strung out on heroin in Mexico City for quite a while, and before I was born. And he had also been meditating and kind of following some spiritual teachings, but he was totally strung out. And he said at some point he just knew that he wanted the Dharma more than he wanted to keep getting high. He just wanted to be awake more than he wanted to keep alleviating the suffering through the heroin. And he said he pulled his, it was a spiritual awakening, and he was going to cop, and he pulled over, and he got sick, and he shit his pants, and he, you know, and he didn't use again. And that it was one of those sort of experiences where, when he talked about addiction, he said he thinks that that's what's necessary. You have to want something else more. You have to want to be awake or to be happy or to, you know, to be free more than you want the relief that the substance gives you. Thanks for your participation and attention tonight, and don't believe a word that any of us have said, and find out for yourself what's true in all areas of this, and really know that you can find out what's true through your own direct investigation. You'll find out for yourself what's true. If you haven't heard, not that very many people were coming anyways, but we were going to try to have this fundraiser this weekend, and we've canceled it because there wasn't enough interest. We were hoping to have at least 100 people, and only 7 people signed up. So we have canceled the fundraiser for the nonprofit. So if you're planning to come, forget about it. But at the same time, please know that our community and our nonprofit organization that supports this community is in need of support. We do need to raise funds, and we do put out more money paying the rent and everything that we do, the insurance and all of that. We put out more money each month than we bring in. So keep that in mind. And if you're in a position to make a tax-deductible donation to help support the community, the center in Hollywood, and these teachings to continue, please consider that. And it would be graciously accepted by us. And one of the ways that we support the community is the 2 baskets out there. And we do ask for about a $5 per person donation for the basic expenses of running this class. And then we also ask you to practice generosity above the $5 donation to support me as a teacher and to support the director of our center. It all goes back into the nonprofit. So checks can be written to Against the Stream, ATS-BMS. And thank you in advance for your generosity and support of us as a community and as of me as a teacher. Oh, Arash isn't here tonight. He sent me a text. Dave, you want to say at the camp cleanup?
If you're sitting along the walls, please leave your cushion and everything there. If you're in the middle, take your zappus and zappatons to the closet here. Don't go around the other side because we're always throwing cushions and stuff around back there. So come to the closet here, and we need 3 volunteers to help out.
1.
2 more. 2. It helps boost your karma.
3. It's 2. Good karma. There you go. Got it. May any goodness that comes from our practice tonight be shared with all beings everywhere, especially those suffering around drugs and alcohol. May all beings benefit. May we awaken for the benefit of this world. See you next time.